everyone, and welcome to today's podcast episode of Let's Talk Cloud Networking with your host, as usual, myself, John Gonzalez, and Newman Mustafa. Today, we're really pleased to be joined by Ryan Wiley and Sebastian Kista of Audi Automotive Group. Ryan's one of the most experienced, highly regarded cloud solution architects, and Sebastian is the product team lead and platform owner for Kubernetes at Audi. And we're really lucky to have them both with us today. And they're going to candidly share their knowledge, their customer learnings and experience, but also they're going to give our audience a sense of how customers are thinking and approaching what we call the most fundamental but critical cloud networking and security constructs. So hi, Ryan, and hi, Sebastian. Welcome to our podcast. Please take a few minutes, introduce yourselves. Tell us a little bit about your background and your role at Audi, and also a little bit of your cloud journey.
Well, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Thanks for having us. So, yeah, I'm the product team lead of the Kubernetes Competence Center and platform owner for Kubernetes public cloud use cases. Also, I introduced the partnership with the Cloud Native Computing Foundation, and we've come a long way to have a process since 2019 now that Audi employees are able to contribute to open source projects. And we are even able to open source entire projects from Audi intellectual property. And this is also very useful to have this mission here of breaking the silo, cross-functional team setups, and obviously driving the cultural change at Audi and Volkswagen Group.
That's great. Thanks, Sebastian. We'll dive a little bit deeper as we get into it and this cultural breakdown of teams.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Ryan, over to you.
Okay. Ryan Wiley. I'm the Cloud Network Solution Architect for Audi AG. I serve a cross-functional role where I work with also with Sebastian's teams for the Kubernetes Competence Centers, as well as with the Azure and AWS platforms, in an effort to drive the change within Audi AG to become more cloud native or more cloud focused with networking. As the initial inception of the clouds really focus on, say, migrating pre-existing on-premise solutions to the cloud in order to facilitate the integration of cloud-based services into Audi's on-prem network centers, which this provided a challenging reason because of experience with network virtual appliances from, say, past third-party vendors don't really scale inside of the cloud. And when trying to use it at scale, it's really hard to manage because really with API integration or using infrastructure as code tools are really not tightly integrated and requires you to develop, say, platform-specific solutions with every single cloud.
That's great. So thanks a lot, Ryan and Sebastian. Welcome to the podcast, first of all. By the way, Sebastian, I love your background for Audi e-tron, a beautiful car, and I'm a big fan of Audi. I'm proud owner of an Audi as well. So I love those, the brands that Audi has. So I'm really happy to be here talking to you guys. Now, in terms of overall cloud journey, right? Obviously, I think all of us, especially from a networking security Kubernetes space, they're coming from an on-prem world, and everybody sort of in a way starts to take that first step, right? And people are moving at their own pace. In the last 1 year, 2 years, we are seeing that there's a massive movement of enterprises who are not just talking about it, but actually are moving to the clouds. So in your Audi case, right, when did you started seriously moving your workloads into the cloud, and where did you move first? Did you move with AWS, Azure first, or together? And what has been your experience initially? Because I think we see that Cloud 1.0, Cloud 2.0, Cloud 3.0 approaches where, as Ryan, you were saying, right, that you start with, first of all, just trusting the cloud and just listen to what they're saying. And then you realize that, hey, this is not going to scale for me. Then you start looking at, okay, who's my networking vendor? So you look at some of the legacy vendors like CSRs and VMware and other product lines. And then you figure out, hey, this is not actually cloud or born in the cloud. So there could be even better solutions. And now people are looking at more modern cloud 3.0 approaches where they're looking for having a combination of born in the cloud vendors as well as native, use the native as much as you can. And that's why I think people say that, buy what you can and build what you must. Right. So this is basically, but again, you do it in a way where your center of gravity is in the cloud. And I think all the guests that comes to our podcast, we ask them, because there are many, many customers who are starting now, right? And we want them to start at the right plan with the right approach so they don't waste time in figuring out what the best model is. So maybe a long-winded question, but maybe a little bit about your journey. How did you get introduced to cloud? What cloud you started with? And what has been your learning and experience over the last few years?
We'll say all the AD's road to the cloud started about 4.5 years ago. I started working in Audi AD about three years ago. And the first cloud was the Amazon Web Services, as it was primarily focused on a single cloud. And doing this aspect, because there was really relative limited knowledge within the organization regarding cloud, as it's a relatively new solution, that the first approach was to use the Transit VPC solution, which used a third-party vendor network virtual appliance to perform a open spoke topology. But this worked initially for small project sizes, but as time grew up, when progressing year to year, the number of projects that wanted to migrate to the cloud greatly increased. So it led to us trying to scale clustering more networks of virtual appliances within the hub. And then this led to a management problem, as did this really support the APIs, as we couldn't really orchestrate these virtual appliances. In addition to that, they were also fixed license models. So if you require 10 gigabits of per second performance for a 12 to say 24 hour period, it was hard to scale down, because although cloud support metering usage, within our organization, you really can't use metered AMIs, as due to with AWS, that you, when using metered licenses, this procurement process takes place in the US, in which we are a European-based company or a German-based company, and this leads to, taxation problems as well as legal issues. And so we started to focus on using more cloud-native solutions, like trying to orchestrate the Transit Gateway solution ourselves, as well as within Azure, because we onboarded Azure at the two-year benchmark in our cloud journey, which we looked into solutions like the Virtual WAN. But with looking into these solutions, we spent more time trying to develop ways of managing these solutions, as well as identifying gaps, for being able to do inter-brand communication, as these types of solutions are, for a single tenant perspective. And that leads you to try to build another additional traction layer on top of these solutions to facilitate this inter-brand solution, as most big organizations like Audi, they're part of a larger group, which requires the sharing of services, applications with a multifaceted set of users that are around the globe. And so during this time, about a year and a half ago, we identified the Aviatrix solution, because initially I tried the Cisco, this AWS Transit Gateway Orchestrator, but still it only orchestrated Transit Gateway. And we required a multi-hub in a single region kind of construct, which this solution did not provide. But this is something that we could easily provide with the Aviatrix solution, allowing this this brand-to-brand communication. So that was originally what led us to Aviatrix. And in addition to be able to not only build the same solution for every single cloud, but being able to repeat it as we decided to use infrastructure as a tool like Terraform, because we try to remain CSP agnostic. But with cloud-specific solutions, it's only specific to a single cloud.
That's great, Ryan. I think this is a So John, this is a very common pattern that we see with our customers, that initially they start with a CSP, a build your own type of a solution, because when they go to CSP, CSP obviously tell them that we provide everything. And then you start building, but then you figure out that this is way too much work. This is not scalable. I need to focus on my business agility. I need to focus on things that provide efficiencies to my business units and my product teams. And then you start to look for, okay, you know, who is the normally my traditionally a networking vendor, right? And then you say, okay, it must be Cisco, it must be VMware. And you start doing that, but they have not built anything purely for the cloud. They have probably sort of lifted and shifted whatever they have built in on-prem and jammed it in the cloud. And then you realize after you use them, hey, this is not operationally simple. It's very complex. And it's not going to give me the advanced capabilities that I'm used to in terms of enterprise networking. And then people find, obviously, Avatrix. And then, as you said, Ryan, it's more about how can I make sure that not only I'm able to leverage native, I'm able to have more advanced capabilities that CSP do not provide because they are not networking security DNA, right? Yes. Avatrix is more networking security DNA. So now you're able to do things that CSP don't even provide, and then being able to provide that in a repeatable manner across clouds so that you architect it exactly the same way, and then your operations team can manage the same way, I think is a great value, and everybody agree, I think, in that regard. And it's a very, very similar trend. So thanks for sharing that insight. But one more question I have for Sebastian, that, you know, when we were in on-prem, a lot of customers, they are in on-prem and they start leveraging Kubernetes, some distribution. I don't know. I mean, you can maybe chime in on what you were using it on-prem. And then when you move to the cloud, again, you want to have a cloud agnostic way of doing things where you can provide the flexibility to your developers. And I think a lot of times if you go and, I mean, in the last podcast, somebody was saying that now you have these 20 years old college grads who have been learning on GKE Anthos and Azure AKS. This is where they're born in. They are not familiar with all of the old distributions. But so what they want is, when they are trying to write code, they want flexibility to use the distribution they want. They don't want to get locked down into certain vendor or certain product. They want IT to provide that flexibility. So maybe, Sebastian, from your perspective, how did you see things and what were you using in on-prem, and now with public cloud initiative, how things are shaping up for Audi?
So we've been facing a very hard and long journey in the VW Group. I must tell you that we have use cases for everything, literally everything. I mean, there is if you start thinking Kubernetes, you immediately do cloud native is vendor lock-in, basically. If you do a cloud native platform, you're in on either one platform or the other platform, which is strategically difficult. It can provide strategic relevance, and it does. So we have EKS platforms, we have AKS platforms that are deliberately going for a vendor lock-in to be completely set up on cloud native services only. And we have also in our ownership cloud agnostic approach to be strategically flexible in this use case. But we've come from departments that have bought hardware, like literally they solve problems with more hardware. And this mindset is also something that we're facing in the cloud. People lift and shift stuff to the cloud, which is legacy, and it has no right to be there, actually. The architecture, it's not like you push your local laptop, the entire laptop, to the cloud. That's not useful. You don't leverage the architectural benefits of the cloud. That there is a distributed service mesh that you can really leverage there. And we face the mindset of, I have money. If I need more money, I apply for more money. And that is the hardware mindset, you know? You don't, your application is not running smoothly, so you want a bigger cluster. You want your machine pool set up with more RAM or whatever, and that is not always the solution, or we face it that it's this mindset is still there, but there are so many more solutions possible, like financial operations, like really consulting on the architecture before they even start developing the project is the best case, you know? Talk to the architect. That is a plan, build, run silo problem that we're facing as well. People say, hey, Sebastian, you got a great platform. It's the most secure in the VW group. I want to launch my container at your platform. Here it is. And I'm like, what? You have your container already? What image are you using even? Is it from our images? No, it's not. It's Docker image. Okay. Yeah, where did you get it from? You downloaded it from the internet. Oh, that makes sense. Okay. and then you go from there and you consult backwards. You consult backwards until you have something that you can gladly launch on your platform to stay secure even. You know, you can do a lot of preemptive security, a lot of policy enforcement, a lot of scanning, but it never is as good as enabling your projects, your customers, your clients, your container building teams to something more long-term. So enabling them with knowledge, with the capability of creating something that really lasts. So and that is the biggest challenge, actually, putting people out of their comfort zones and changing their mindset to be cloud native or to be cloud ready. We're talking cloud native a lot of here, but 90% of the times we should stick to what's there, and that is very few. So cloud ready would be enough, to be honest. If they're just are open for being enabled, and that is the biggest mission. We are at the bottom layer, IT infrastructure, like network with Ryan or you guys. We are the bottom layer. We're the very basic layer, and we have the power to change this culture by saying, "No, guys, I show you how it's done."
Yeah, and I think that architecture first approach, even at that fundamental network and security layer. If that's not done from the beginning, then you go through these cycles of trying pure cloud native, finding out some gaps and incompatibility issues and scaling issues and all sorts of things. Then, as you mentioned earlier, Ryan, a year and a half later, you found Aviatrix. Oh, actually, I'm curious to understand, how did you find Aviatrix? Because it sounds like we addressed this architectural problem for you. That scale and that repeatability between regions, between clouds, or at least I hope we've solved it for you. Let's put it that way. So, I think we have.
So about 2 years ago that I already started the requirement to integrate projects into the Azure environment. And seeing this first inception of onboarding this new, cloud environment took about a year. Which, because we couldn't really repeat the same architecture or even the infrastructure that we had within AWS to Azure, which required more time to research to identify, how can we procure this cloud exchange technology? What are the requirements to implement this changes cloud exchange technology? What architecture works best within Azure to allow us to continuously grow or ability to scale down when need be? And so the first time to find an Aviatrix, I was just searching the market, also looking at Gartner. As Aviatrix was listed as one of the top cloud native networking vendor in currently in the world at the moment, which was glad to me. So I reached out to your sales team, which I have worked with Frey, Thomas, and Robert for continuously over the year and a half to identify gaps in our current architecture. How can we plan to scale in the future? And as well as how do we maintain flexibility to be able to not have a vendor lock-in within our architectural design, which we have viewed in the past as most solutions that said they were cloud native by design was a complete 100% vendor lock-in, as it was more so a lift and shift project of onboarding, say, on-prem based solutions into the cloud, which really didn't fit say our requirements. And so after, say, months and months, we looked into how Opilot provided us a single operation plane in view to have visibility within the cloud, as we have a lot of, say, ITSec requirements and stuff to be able to have full logging and monitoring of the infrastructure, which Copilot provide, as well as having a central control and being able to authenticate users, which is possible to do with the controller aspect, as well as now with the inception of, say, the Threat IQ, allows us to be able to identify vulnerabilities or threats within the cloud, which we have to use more cloud-specific solutions like GuardDuty and say, and also I can't remember the solution for Azure at the moment, to be able to identify these types of threat on our own. And so,
yeah, that's good. So from a you guys are obviously quite highly regulated, and you know, with some of the feature functionalities you get from cloud native and you get from Aviatrix, which yeah, we certainly believe more advanced capabilities, especially security and networking.
Yes.
Then from a regulatory perspective, do we help with, you know, when you come, you know, regulators or your own internal audit compliance teams come and examine you and they ask the questions about the cloud networking and your security, what controls, what risk management, what governance practices you have in place, not only that you have in place, but you can actually demonstrate that you're undertaking those practices as well in real life. Do we help in that respect, or is cloud native, you know, pushing forward more than us?
No, I actually, Aviatrix helps a lot in this book because of you have the ability to audit every API request. So on the perspective from a CSP, that this is done, say, based on a subscription or account. So you cannot have this information essentially available unless you develop your own solution, like using with AWS, using the firehose to be able to aggregate this log data into a central repo, then say refine and analyze this data to be able to get the same type of metadata from. And with Aviatrix, you get this from the first inception of applying the solution, that you can see every single API call, where it originated from, time, date, stamp, and also replay the, say, changes to your overall architecture. So if you identify something that's changed without, say, maliciously or say, as a defined required change, that you can say who made it, what time it happened, and these are critical, say, in our security, but being able to uniquely, quickly identify changes, why it happened, when it happened, do we have some type of breach, or there's malicious activities that's going on from our own internal users. And this is what Aviatrix provides for us.
That's really good insights, Ryan and Sebastian. So one of the things that I noticed from both of your responses that, application developers, they are there to build apps and build business. They are there, yeah. They're doing a certain job. Now, when they go to the cloud, they want to be agile, right? Because it's time to market, it's about competitive advantage. But in many cases, you know, the cloud providers have traded convenience over security. Right. And then your app developers wants to build things fast. And in many cases, they try to bypass because if they see there is a delay from an IT or from a cloud infrastructure team perspective, they would like to do things on their own. So what Aviatrix does, right, is provides you best of both worlds, where without slowing you down, you provide the security and compliance and the high performance architecture that you need. And the one thing that the Sebastian mentioned, right, in Kubernetes world, you want to provide freedom for developers to leverage the tools they want, the cloud they want. And then now each cloud is providing services that are better in one cloud versus the other. Right? They all specialize in certain services. So for example, if there's an AI service from a Google, you might want to prefer that because it does certain things better than, let's say, Azure. And then now with the advent of these edge IoT devices, right? Your cars, connected cars are also in a way are endpoints. The way we see it, they're almost like a spoke, like a VPC that is just mobile. It's a small micro data center that is sending the data into the cloud for analytics. It does its local processing locally, but then it sends data for, let's say, SageMaker or Azure machine learning services. So you need to be able to provide that flexibility, and you need to be able to provide application and businesses the ability to securely connect with services they want, right? And I think this is where we come in really handy, or Evitrix can provide that capability. Like for, if you have a, you know, microservices in a VPC inside AWS, it's talking to something in Azure, it's talking to the on-prem. So egress traffic, ingress traffic, we provide that compliance and secure architecture that really helps out the overall cloud network architecture of an enterprise. But coming to that, your connected cars, I think a lot of customers that we talk to are heavily investing in connected cars and be able to provide that smarts. How is Audi and VW Group is focusing on that? And is cloud providing that additional value that you were not able to realize when you were in on-prem because of these services that are now available in the marketplace? So what are your thoughts on that?
You can go ahead, Sebastian.
Yeah, so from a non-technical perspective, we even have with the connected cars a more customer-centric business value in there. I mean, we go for more on-demand services. For example, you're in a traffic jam, your car is fully loaded, but by software, you toggle for the next 5 hours to your holiday drive or your road trip, the traffic assistant or the lane assistant plus different other assistant or services or a different service on your car, and that is something like car as a platform for other things, and therefore you need to be deployable over the air with some services, and obviously you need to reach your cars every time of the day and every point of time with a full load, actually. So you need to be performant, and it's also like if you have an update and you have to like recall all your cars to the vendor or to a service shop, I mean, that costs a lot of money. And just imagine 1 hour per car, and you have a million modern cars out there that needs the software update. That's a million work hours then. And if you can save them, it's less trouble for your customer because he just loves a click and he's done. So for him, it's a minute. And we save a lot of money. So that is a huge change in how connected cars change. They create business models, new business models, and they change old business models. And that's a very, very important issue why this topic is so fired upon, actually. This is a very, very important topic. Also, you want your brakes work. You want your software work as well. So security first.
I love the analogy you use, car as a platform, car as a service. You know, it's...
Now, Ryan and Sebastian, so we have lots of... Evitrix has, you know, we are one of the favorite cloud networking platform for a lot of car manufacturers in general. And some of them that we have talked to, were very concerned about security in the cloud. They want to make sure that they are protected day one, right? And they don't want to take it as an afterthought. And I know that, you know, so at least from Evitrix perspective, we provide this control plane and a distributed data plane where we own the data plane and we can extract this NetFlow data. Ryan, as you were talking about ThreadIQ and ThreadGuard, the main, the reason why we are able to do that is because we see all the traffic flows that are flowing through our gateway, because we own that data plane. Even though it's running on top of every cloud and to the on-prem, we're able to see that data. And then when you're able to see the data, you can discover, detect analyze and protect, right? So you are able to do things which can make it very, very secure. Like ThreatGuard, for example, that you mentioned is a service where we subscribe to any of the malicious known IP address service. And then anytime we see it anywhere in the network, cloud network, we are able to alert that, not only alert that, but we can block that communication flow to that malicious IP out on the internet right away. And then let security teams and architects figure out why this, you know, let's say my connected car application platform is talking to a server in XYZ country, right? So it's basically that proactiveness, that AI-based intelligence that's being built into the Avatrix platform that's making it really easy for, because at the end of the day, a lot of security teams are pretty smart, but they need to see things. If you're not even able to see things like in the black box that PGW and VirtualWAN and all these different constructs that you have, they're black boxes. And the reason why they're black boxes is because they are shared infrastructure for millions of customers. You can't really get access to that. But I think what we do is we basically dedicate that infrastructure to a customer. And now you have access to the flows. And when you have access to the flows, you can take smart decisions in terms of securing it. But from your perspective, right, what do you also, as a VW group and Audi, concerned about security and how important that is for you guys, and what are the actions you guys are taking?
So security within the cloud is highly important for us within Audi, and not only within VW group. It's because of one, within the CSP, you really have limited to zero visibility within the cloud. Within AWS, you have the VPC logs, which you can use to be able to identify your flows. But this metadata that is provided is very limited in scope, especially that you cannot, once the traffic's outside of your VPC, that you cannot actually see the flows identify until it hits your direct connect and you see it directly from your own, network virtual appliances or or customer edge devices. And this, with Avatrix, provides us visibility not only within inside of the VPC, but also as this data traverses the CSP's platform, say even over a peer connection, or even over a VPN connection, or even using a transit gateway attachment within inside of AWS. And this also transfers to Azure and OCI within this model. So at the moment, we are trying to achieve, a more secure platform, as we're currently using Avatrix to, encrypt data while it's in transit, not only using TLS, but to ensure data is actually, but using IPsec as additional overhead. And we face issues with using, other network virtual appliances in the same construct, because you really couldn't scale as much as the other end device had to be a virtual gateway, that was only limited you to 1.25 gigabits per second, which in this common concept, you can actually use, the encrypted peering connections to have the additional level of security. So no matter which connectivity medium that you use, you can always ensure that you, the owner of the key, and only this data is decrypted while inside of, your gateway or someone that's on-prem. And this is something that you cannot guarantee with just using CSP-provided solutions.
That's great. Spot on. You know, you can't guarantee. You have to own the security. It's your data. It's not, you know, as we say, a shared responsibility. It's your responsibility to own the security and the integrity of your data. I have a question, Sebastian, for you regarding the cultural change that Audi needed to go through in order to be a cloud first type company. How did your people sort of adapt to that change? Is it still a little bit of a struggle and still some convincing to be done, or is everyone fully accepted we are cloud? And that's where our, future technology, that's where our future learning now lies, within the cloud.
And the silos, how did you handle the silos? Yeah. That's a big thing.
Yeah. So in the center of our work here is the passion of people. So basically, it's about passionate people. If you think passionate people are loving what they're doing and sharing that knowledge, what they can do, what they can perform, and what they can provide also to people. And if you have a strong customer success management that is forcing people to success, not like guiding people to success mm-hmm. and waiting for the response, you know that yourself, if you write an email, no answer, you can wait, but it won't lead anywhere. Mm-hmm. So you can force people to success and to go out of their comfort zones, learn something new. And you can also do that in the infrastructure by shared responsibilities and say, yeah, we give you this 80% of what you need. And if you need something on top, you can wait for the bottleneck to solve it for you, or you can do it yourself. So that's how we started in 2017 with Inner Source, actually, with passionate people sharing their passions and creating something together, cross silo, cross project, cross brand even. And that is why open source, by the way, is so important, because you do that on a global scale. And when we go for this customer success management, and you guide one project, two projects to their success, whether they want or not, right? And you enable them. So in the focus really on onboarding people to the platform, it's not always technical solutions. People always talk technical solutions here and there, but it's the professional services around these technical solutions that allows people to use these technical solutions. The solution is only worth if people are able to use it, actually. So you need to enable the people, and you need passionate people to enable other people, and they will be passionate about it, because if you have a depth in something, if you know something very well, it creates passion anyway, just by right. being deep in your topic. And like if you have this customer success management a couple of times, and if you do that 20 times, at a certain point, you will have a community.
Yeah.
And this community that will be able to share more with more people. And that is how you scale, because the market, the HR market, if you want to contract people, that market is completely empty. It's right. it's complete. You won't find anyone. And you don't scale by hiring the experts that are out there already. You scale by enabling everyone you have to use your product, to use your platform, to understand cloud, and to solve problems, and to really feel, whoa, I did this. I created value add for my company. Well, that is, you might be smiling if you hear that now, but if you're in a big enterprise, this risk mitigation game that they're playing, that became so dominant. That's why they are outsourcing so many things, because you don't scale otherwise. You always scale with budget and people, and that game is over. You now scale right. with competence and passion. And if you enable the people and they create something again, they have a success story for their own career, they feel valuable, and they will deep dive into the topic, because it was a great feeling doing that. And our customers of our platform, we have an onboarding and enablement package in the first, and they are enabled to do the stuff that we don't want on our platform, because we think it's project responsibility and it should be. And this way of shared responsibility is not throwing shit over fences,
mm-hmm.
Which happened before when they say, oh no, there's an SLA, that's your responsibility, I don't care. So here, take the container, whatever you do with it, I don't want it. And mm-hmm. or it's about software versions. And the same happens with the fact that we are really competence focused. Competence is also term that includes motivation for something. If you're motivated for something, you will be able to get the skills for it.
Right. Do you have that same drive, that same collaboration, and that same sort of culture right across the VW group, or are you unique in Audi AG and then it's slowly disseminating across?
This is project by project. I mean, yeah. I admit, okay. people say that doesn't scale. It's the only way to scale. Okay. So everything else doesn't scale. That's the way to scale, actually. You can a very, very nice mix of great products, great technical solutions, and enabling the people to use them and deep dive into them and share what they learned with their project people. That's the way to go.
Yeah.
And okay. And this is something that is that hurts. That is a lot of work and it's slow. It's project by project, actually. You scale faster later on, obviously, because you have a bigger community, but at the beginning it's painful and it's slow. And on a group level or not, it's project by project. It doesn't matter if it's a Seat, a Skoda, or a VW or an Audi project. It's really about if you have a great product that they want to onboard to, and you enable them in FinOps consulting, in pipeline automation, in creating in showing them how a Kubernetes manifest is written and stuff, also in laying some network routes. And it might be easy as creating a DNS table, but they did it themselves the first time in maybe 10 years. They did something themselves. And this is really bringing people to the solutions, to the technical solutions. Obviously, they need to be great in the first place. So that's for granted. You can buy all the great solutions, but if you have nobody to operate them, it's useless. And if you really bring these people to work on these solutions and to use them and to be creative about them and to ask questions, then we've reached a point where the community of previously enabled and run through several customer success programs, they will come back with other people, with other projects. They work on a different project, they come again to you. And that is what is happening, actually. It's paying off now, actually. We have onboarded the last, in 2021, several projects. And there are guys that came back for the fourth time with the fourth project now, different use case, because they know we will not let loose of their hand until they're successfully in a cluster, no matter of their on-prem connectivity issues, no matter of their cloud architectural issues, we will be there for them, consult them. And this part of being a platform, you had like a 90% technical solutions part. Now it's maybe 60%, 40% is consulting, actually.
Yeah. No, that's quite insightful. Listen, Ryan, Sebastian, I think we've taken, a lot of your time. We've gone over, which has been great. But could I ask, could you leave our audience with two or three key takeaways? Any advice, any recommendations for customers starting already maybe on their cloud journeys, thoughts on pure cloud versus benefits of leverage cloud native, partners like Aviatrix, or any misconceptions out there they should avoid? Anything that you want to leave our audience with, really?
So yeah, I think something that one key takeaway from each, from me, the key takeaway, Sebastian, is how beautiful this e-tron car is. This is going to be my dream car. Look forward to it. Yes, I can see that. Our audience cannot, but they can go to Google and search for it. So maybe Ryan, one key takeaway from you, and Sebastian, one from you. Great.
I would say the key takeaway for me from leveraging the cloud and experiencing the cloud is especially use cloud native and a third-party vendor solution like Aviatrix, because one, it allows you to onboard newer cloud faster, because most people conceptualize that you start off in one cloud and you always can stay in that cloud, but eventually you will onboard a second, a third, or a fourth cloud, because cost savings is the number one driver for cloud adoption. and not a cloud-specific solution.
Got it. Sebastian?
Yeah, I would really just remind from the very first perspectives of why you're doing things in a data center that you don't own is as crowd, as whole world, as a community, you leverage way more than you can do alone. And this Ford created cloud, actually. So 10, 20, 100, thousands of enterprises can use what Amazon, first of all, did for themselves or others. And they shared it and made a business out of it by creating this for everyone. And this is something very interesting that should be adapted with your own data centers that you still will be using, because some stuff just needs to be on premise anyway. And you need this connectivity as well with the elastic way of cloud and leverage the benefits of it, that you can start into a journey of the unknown. And that is I think the biggest benefit of cloud, that you don't need to know everything when you start. Yeah. You can learn, you can inspect and adapt, you can react quickly, because this is the core competence of today's world. It's not knowing everything, because 20 years ago you could consult the company and you knew probably all the technologies and you solved it with another problem. And today it's not possible anymore. You need to 45 specialists on creating a solid infrastructure somewhere. And specialist B doesn't know what specialist A has. And yep. And that is also something you can start into the journey of the unknown, because the core competence is not knowing everything. It is reacting quickly.
Yeah, and I think that's a mistake, especially a lot of large enterprises make. They think they have to know everything on their cloud journey. They'll never know everything. And no. They think they have to do everything on their own, but you don't. You know, as you said earlier, you know, buy what you can, build what you must, you know, Numan? And I think that's great, you know. But guys,
I have one last thing to say. And also the cloud really... I say forces the change for the separation of duties, because one of the main things in cloud requirements, you need to be a cross-functional team, that you cannot focus just on a single topic. You need to know about networking, you need to know about security, you need to know about compute, and also the ability to develop on your own, that you have to remain flexible.
The great insight. Thanks, Ryan and Sebastian. It's been very insightful. And I'm sure that our audience would love it. So hopefully we will be able to do some more of these in a more focused topics in the future. But, you know, Audi is one of our most, I would say, likable customer here in Evitrix. We have a good learning from both sides, and we are going to help other customers, you know, be successful in the cloud. That's the whole purpose of this cloud networking podcast and cloud journal community, right? It's about we all learn together and move the motion of cloud forward. So thank you so much.
It's great thank stuff you having you guys here.
Thank you.
And I'll just leave you with Vorsprung Dork technique, and have a great evening, guys.
Thank you.
You too. See you. Bye.
You too. Bye. Bye.